Welcome back to 100% Cars. My name is Nico Lombard, and I'm glad to say that I've returned for a second season. Thank you all for tuning in, and for those returning listeners, a special thank you to you. And to acknowledge my return, I interview Miles Brennan, the host and creator of Miles Per Hour, a well-known automotive YouTube channel. Make sure to check it out. And without further ado, I hope you all enjoy the interview as I get to talk about Miles' fascinating and unique filming process, as well as how he's gotten to the high level of YouTube success he has today. Enjoy. Stumbled upon like the very first videos that you made, you know, with the motorcycle and just these cool reviews. And I just wanted to know, like, did this start off as a hobby, or did you always kind of, you know, want to have a YouTube channel and just go from there?
Yeah, I started watching like Top Gear when I was younger, and always just fascinated by how those shows were put together, and that someone could even do that as a career. And I found them to be entertaining regardless of the car content, which is really the most impressive thing to me, is just that they had this group of people who'd watch them, yeah, who loved cars, but some people just tuned in because of their chemistry as hosts. And so that's kind of like where I first fell in love with automotive presenting in general. But I've always just loved cars since I was a kid. And I thought, ah, it'd be, you know, a dream job to do that one day. But I didn't really think it was possible. And I didn't really know how you would do something like that. So when I kind of started making those first YouTube videos, you know, they're just me just with a motorcycle, just installing an exhaust system or something and just putting it up in YouTube, which was, I don't know, I think, when did I put those up? I can't remember. You know, YouTube was still relatively new as a popular content medium. And so I didn't really know what was going to happen with those. I just kind of wanted to participate and just to throw some content up. And they did like, okay. And one did really well. And I didn't really know what to do with myself at that point. I'm like, where do I go from here? And of course, it was the first videos were about my motorcycle. And so I didn't really have any car content generation ideas. But how that kind of led me to what I'm doing now is I recognized YouTube as a viable way to gain great exposure. Granted, at that time, there were many fewer people who were competing for attention. And now it's a very, as you know, super oversaturated spot. But I still think even now, there's always room for more content creators. And I kind of got to my spot where I am now just after doing a lot of writing and video production for different automotive media outlets. And that was after pursuing a career in public relations and marketing for tech companies. I went to school in Boston and I went to work for some of those. While on the side, I was able to, through a network connection through my university, I was able to get in touch with a person who knew an executive producer of an automotive news show. And so I was able to do some freelance writing for them on the side while pursuing a career in tech and marketing, and kind of just kept my toe in the automotive pot, if you will. And then when the time was right to dive into that full time, I went into freelance full time, created a lot of relationships with automakers, which I then leveraged later when I decided to do my own thing. They already knew who I was. And so when I was coming to them asking for car loans, I may not have had a big audience to speak to, but I could say, hey, you know who I am. You can trust me with the cars. And you know that if you give me a car loan, I not only will take care of your car, but I will also create content from it. I'm not just going to go, hey, free wheels for the week, see you later, you know? And kind of the rest is history. I just continued to work really hard at it. And I'm just a really stubborn person. So, you know, if I was ever faced with, channel dipping or it just not feeling like it was working, I wouldn't stop. I would tweak something. Sure, I wasn't just going to, you know, continue doing what was not working. I would tweak something, but I'd keep going. And so that was really critical. I've kind of answered a lot of questions more than just your initial one. I apologize.
No, all good. All good. Yeah, awesome. And so I noticed, as you know, you mentioned that it was kind of a hobby, but did these earlier like reviews of cars, was this during your college years? And was it a challenge getting these cars to review at that time? Or was this later on?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's funny because I think that the younger content creators who are getting automotive loans have really found a way in to do that. First through going through dealerships or personal cars, because the automakers are really very strict about who they give loans to. A lot of the times the automakers will say you either need to be 25 years old or 26 years old or older than that for them to sign off a car loan to people. And so to get access to those cars, I kind of needed to be a certain age to do that. And so at first, I wasn't even able to go on press trips or anything like that. And it worked out that I had kind of done this circuitous route to get to automotive because I was doing the tech marketing and I was doing, I also started a food service business with my dad, just other random things that I was working on. But that kind of delayed my start into full-time automotive reviewing. So I was old enough at that point to then get the car loan. So it kind of just, it worked out timing wise for me to get those. But I say all that and then go return to, you're never too young to do this. And in fact, I would argue like the younger you are, the better, because there are so many different ways you can get access to cars. Anyone who reaches out to me who isn't of an age where an automaker is going to sign off on a loan, I would say to them, who cares? Just go to dealerships or find your neighbor's car or, you know, whatever you got to do to get behind the wheel. Or so many content creators, I'm sure you've seen, they don't even necessarily drive cars. They're just talking about trends and they can build an audience that way. And if you get big enough, automakers sometimes will forgive the age thing and they'll just give you a loan anyway. So you're never too young to get started. It just, for me, worked out where I was old enough to be kind of have the straight and narrow road of them saying, yeah, you're old enough to get a car loan.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And so as you started to, you know, get these loans and started to develop videos, did you have like a plan or like a way you film the videos? Or was it just kind of like, I'll just review it, I'll drive it, and then we'll just post it and then do it again?
Yeah, that's a good question. So when I first was making car content, I don't know if I necessarily had a good strategy for making the content. I kind of fell into it. I tried a bunch of different things. And I think it's for those people who are like, oh, I know exactly how I'd make a video. I would do this, this, and this. Great. Like you've jumped ahead like five steps or so. And you should just like bullishly approach it that way and see if it works, right? Being aware that if it doesn't work, you're gonna have to change some things. I've had to change things multiple times in what I'm doing, but I kind of like stumbled into my formula. I had a friend of mine and I, who were just like making goofy videos and seeing if those worked. They didn't really work, and it's okay because we had fun doing it. And he and I still joke about that stuff. But I think it kind of like, it set the tone doing the goofy videos or trying to figure it out. It set the tone for like being open to whatever may work while trying different things, acknowledging the things that I liked doing and the things I didn't like doing. So I would make a video and I would go, I think this is what you're supposed to do. And I would do it and I'd be like, wasn't fun at all. And so I would go, hey, even if this worked, would I be happy doing this in a year? The same kind of way of making a video. And often it was like, no, I wouldn't. And so I'm just not going to do that. I may take a piece of what works and just kind of make it my own, just tweak it a little bit. But trying so many different approaches really led me to the formula that I have now that I really love. And that formula now is changing all the time too. Like even that, I'm like, I just tried something new today and I really liked it. So I think we're just going to slowly move towards that direction. So it's an ever-changing, constantly evolving thing, but I would really encourage people who are just starting out, unless they know exactly how they want to make their videos, just try whatever you can and just be open to what the results are.
With your YouTube channel, you know, I think, would you say you're notorious for having the, you know, the POV, you know, look, which I think is awesome. But was that like an idea from the beginning? You were like, yeah, I'm going to do this. This is going to be like how I'm going to film videos. And
no, like, honestly, that it was funny because I was doing kind of a more traditional camera pointed at me talking kind of thing. And And I loved presenting, and I still like presenting. So it's kind of funny that like my new, pardon me, current approach is a sort of a hybrid of the two. It's like a POV, but I also have another camel I'm talking to at the same time. But I discovered POVs through a guy who has become a friend, but Chris Amos, the Topher, who also has a POV channel and also does things like this. And he kind of like saw POV the way he explained it to me when I interviewed him in my like kind of car podcast show. He explained that he discovered POV because someone wasn't really trying to make POV car content, but they just did make a video, and it seemed like they made a one-off video and just like never did it again. And he was like, oh, this is something. I like this. It's a great perspective. And so he did all this research and testing to find the right way to mount the POV camera and to pursue that. And then he really started the Winding Road Racing channel, POV channel, and which now has like a million subscribers. And it's all like no talk, or not almost exclusively like no talking videos. You're just driving. And then he, from that, branched off and did his own thing as well with opinions and impressions. And so I think I had discovered his videos when he was pretty early on with his own channel, and had done much more with Winding Road, but pretty early on with his own channel. And I said, not a lot of people are doing this, and I really like this because it was immersive. It was like you were getting to be the driver, you're getting to experience the car in a very different way. And so I sort of adopted that with his permission. I adopted it. And there's another guy, Tedward, who has another POV channel, does a similar thing, was also working on Winding Road stuff with Chris Amos. And so, and we're, you know, we're larger channels that are doing this, but there are many, many other channels now that are really going hard on POV videos. And I expect that that pool of people making POV content will only grow. But it spoke to me as a person who really just wanted to showcase what a car was like to drive and to talk you through what that experience is like. Because at first I was making, similar to Winding Road, I was just making videos where I was just driving. And I'm thinking, this is great because anyone who wants to experience what a car is like without going to a dealership necessarily can just get there. And you wouldn't instinctively just talk to yourself while driving. And so you're just, in this way, you're just getting a driving experience. But over time, I started going, I'm bored. And I just wanted to talk and share what I was feeling more. And so that kind of has led me into what I'm doing now. And more recently, I've started adding another camera angle just to have that like one-to-one with the audience that I feel like I've missed, because I'm, yes, talking to you, but I feel like with a camera there, for whatever reason, like it's another point of connection. And so now I've got both the POV and that secondary camera angle going. And this is what I mean about the evolving formula, because I thought POV is it, and I'm just going to do POV videos. But now I was like, but there's still something missing there. And so then I brought in this other camera angle.
Interesting. And so do you think that, you know, I guess not just introducing the new camera angle, but kind of just having your own unique style, does that bring in, do you notice that you bring in an audience of, you know, older adults looking to buy cars, or is it just really tailored towards younger?
It's a good question. I like to, it's pretty selfish, but when I make the videos, I literally think I'm talking to myself, right? The secondary camera angle, I think, okay, I'm talking to my audience, but I like literally just picture me talking to me. And so I think I'm 30, just turned 33, right? So like I'm thinking I'm talking to younger 30s, other Miles's out there, people who may not have the resources to buy these cars. Some do, some are older, obviously. And I get people who comment all the time going like, I just bought this thing and it's some crazy nice car. And, oh, wow. Good for you, you know, but like, I'm just talking to other me's. I'm just talking to other people who I want to get excited about what I'm driving in the same way that I'm super excited about driving it. And so it used to be in the beginning, I really was thinking I'm giving car buying advice. That's what I was thinking. Now it's really turned into just entertainment for me more than anyone else, right? But to other people, hopefully as well. So like, hopefully you can tune into a video where I'm reviewing a Honda Civic, which I haven't done very many, you know, regular Civics recently, right? But you can tune into one of those, and you can tune into a Lamborghini Huracan video, both of those just going like, hey, this was just fun to watch, right? And so if someone buys a Huracan because of my video, cool. Or if someone buys a Civic because of my video, cool. But for mostly, and this even goes into when I share all the competition and I kind of talk through everything, that yes is some buying advice, but it's more I'm just kind of outlining how I think about the state of the segment that I'm talking about. So if it's a Huracan, I'm thinking, okay, we're also competing with the Ferrari F8 and the McLaren Artura, and we're just talking about these cars, and I'm just going like, here's what they're offering. And so someone could go, ah, this is great buying advice. I'm now going to go buy the Artura because I like more of what he said the Artura does. But ultimately, you could just go, ah, they're all pretty amazing. That was fun, and move on.
And so, as you mentioned, becoming more of an entertainment channel, does that mean the cars that you choose to review are just really out of personal interest rather than
100%.
what's the audience going to want to see? Yeah.
100%. Yeah. So like I picture an audience of me once again, just going like, yeah, you could review the, I mean, and I did review one not terribly long ago, but like you could review a Kia Telluride, and there's nothing wrong with the Kia Telluride. I think it's a great vehicle, but wouldn't it be so much more fun if you reviewed a Hyundai Elantra N, right? And 'cause I love at any price point, I love something where you can feel the passion that went into building it. And so with the Elantra N, just an example, it's like, okay, these guys brought it in terms of their performance engineering and like and their laser focus on kind of upsetting that segment and going like, yeah, this is a budget economy car, but we're gonna make it really, really fun to drive. So like I don't care about the price. I really don't. I care about, is it fun to drive? And is it fun to talk about? Can it get me excited? And so those are the cars I choose. And I used to cover a much broader spread, but now I've really kind of just focused in on performance, luxury vehicles, and trucks, and performance can also entail, pardon me, EVs as well.
And I guess I kind of want to shift now just to some cool cars that you've interviewed and kind of just like the process. And I think the one I want to talk about most is the Bugatti Chiron.
Oh yeah.
And just like the pro I mean, just what was going through your mind there and how did you even get to that point?
Yeah. So I mean the first time I reviewed the Bugatti Chiron, I don't know if you do you, did you see the 2016 review? Yeah. So that one I 100 and I still felt undeserving of the super sport, but I felt like a completely out of water fish. Like I don't belong here. Why am I in this car? And it's funny because like it was me, and then what you don't see is there was a videographer there with me in the passenger seat, and I was young at the time. He was like 22, and he's like, this is a $3 million car. He was like scared out of his mind. Now it was also pouring rain the morning of, and so the roads were slick. And I'm in this ridiculously powerful, expensive car. The last thing I want to do is have any sort of incident. I trusted myself behind the wheel, but also like it's a 1500 horsepower, mega car. So, but yeah, like getting the reason I was able to even review that car was because an outlet that I was writing for at the time got an invite to do this review. And this is really just a fortuitous situation where like the outlet's exec the editor of the outlet wasn't they'd just been fired, I think, at the time. And so it was kind of a free-for-all with us freelancers of who was going to take this, and I was the closest one there. And so the email came in and I was like, I live an hour away, I'm going to do this. And they were like, all right, fine. And so I just went there, and I did, I rehearsed. That was one of the ones where I really rehearsed in my mind what I was going to say. Of course, like being there and living in it, it changed, right, what I thought I was going to say. But I still had like an intro planned, and I had like other things I wanted to talk about. But that was definitely one of those like just pinch me, just pinch me. There's no way I'm driving this car right now as a, it was 26 year old or whatever I was at the time. Like it just, I couldn't fathom it.
Yeah, well, that's awesome. And I guess it was just, with a moment like that, and just, I noticed that you do end up saying all these facts, whether it's drivetrain, options, and just like, is that a lot of just memorization? I guess in that moment, what was, Was it even time to kind of like remember what's, what I'm going to talk about, whether it's like, the engine or the wheel, whatever it offers
Yeah.
as.
Yeah, my brain works really in really weird ways. I can't remember like qualitative information, like the textures and other details like that. I've got a if it's a verbal thing, if it's Nappa leather or something like that, I can vaguely remember things like that, those details. But for whatever reason, if it's a spec, if it's a car spec, I can just like spit it right out. And so I just review the information, usually like once for a couple minutes, and it just stores in my memory bank for the amount of time that I need it. And the moment I don't need it anymore, it's just a waste gate. It just is dumped. And I don't know how it works that way, but it works. And so I'm not on the level of like, I think Joe Rady probably does this even better than I do, where like he can one take things and just like spew out, because I can't do that, because while I could remember all of the data, the specs about the car, he would also remember it's got this LED light down here, and it's got this thing, and just like I'm like, I don't remember that stuff. I just remember, what the engine was, how much power it made, when it was last used and what vehicle. But yeah, my brain works in that way where I don't know why I retain that information. But it's really been trained to know the data it needs to. And then the moment it doesn't need it anymore, it just throws it down the garbage chute.
Interesting, interesting. I was wondering if we could just end the meeting here, and then I just joined the same link, and I was asking like two or three more questions, then we can.
Yeah, no problem. No problem,
Yeah,
Nico. Okay.
awesome. Yeah, so kind of to touch back on the Bugatti video and that, just being like a dream and kind of not being real. Are there any dream cars that are on like the dream car list you're reviewing?
Yes, top of the list right now is any Koenigsegg. Like, I just, their feats of engineering, they're so interesting to me. And I need to experience what it's like to drive something that is so well thought out. And the Bugatti was kind of like that, right? I was driving it, even the Super Sport review more recently. I'm just driving, just going like, everything feels so perfected. We're like, they could have just like refined it to this amount, but they had all this extra money and all this extra time. So they just refined it to a level of detail completely unnecessary. That's the Koenigseggs for me from an engineering standpoint, not necessarily details or whatever, because I've looked inside them. I'm like, eh, they're nice, right? But it's how they engineer those cars to be so much more sophisticated and more capable than anything else in their peripheries that I'm like, I just can't wait to drive that. I really, really want to drive that. A Pagani would also be really cool. That would also be way up there. That's more of an aesthetic and auditory wonder for me. There's crazy looking cars and they sound insane. So yeah, those two are the top of the list for me.
Thank you all for tuning in, and I hope you enjoyed today's episode. It is great to be back. So expect a couple more interviews and episodes, as this will be the second and final season of this podcast. But until then, I'll see you next time. Bye.